Welcome to the Women in Action Sports Network Conversation Space. I am Alba Pardo and today we're going to speak with Michaela Schmidt. Michaela is a Wonder Woman. She is based in Switzerland. She is now in charge of the Chill Foundation project in Switzerland, which she's going to tell all us about it. But she's also a professional organizer. I can't wait for you to hear all about what Michaela has been doing with the Chill Foundation, her personal story, traveling all over the world, and of course her discovery of a simple life and her devotion to help others do the same. So without further ado, please welcome Michaela Schmidt.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michaela. Welcome. How are you?
I'm fine. Hello, Alba.
Where are you right now?
I am in Lux, Switzerland. Yes.
Is that what you call home?
Yeah. It's my home for like 7 years now. Mm-hmm. Crazy how time passes by so fast.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because for Lux, a lot of us know it and we think of the snow paradise, but it's not as common to go in summer. How's the summer life there now that the season's starting?
Yeah, summer is more quiet and winter definitely, but there's still a lot going on. Many people come here for biking or to visit the lovely Gamasee, which feels like the Caribbean. And yeah, I really enjoy that it's more calm in summer, and I also like to go to the city in summer and enjoy that part of life too. So yeah, I'm not bored in summer.
That's good. I guess there's a lot of biking too. And yeah.
Yeah. And skateboarding. We have some nice pump tracks. Mm. Yeah.
So before we get into details, tell me a bit about yourself. What's your story? How did you end up in Lax and why and what brought you all the way here?
Yeah. I grew up in the mountains in Davos, another ski resort in Switzerland. And yeah. No, but I grew up there, did my school there, and got introduced to freestyle by some boys. And that's the point where I started to dedicate my life to snowboarding. And after high school, I went to Canada to travel from Vancouver to Toronto with my snowboard. And then I decided to study tourism so I can be in ski resorts. And that's when I went to South Bay and met you at the Women in Board Sport.
Yes. What year was that? Because we've been in so many of them. Was it?
That was in 2011? 9 and 10.
9 and 10. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe we met later at the WIP, could be. But that was the first year Daniela organized the.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was in the middle of the snowboard scene and enjoyed it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then I went studying in Chur. And after that, I made like the decision to work in Zurich. That was not so good for me, being not in the mountains, but it was also a good experience. So I missed the mountains even more. And then I reached my goal, because my goal after studying tourism was to work for Lux, to do marketing for them. And then I came to Lux, did marketing for them. After that, I went traveling around the world with my snowboard and my surfboard for 1 year. And
I remember seeing photos and being like,
Yeah, that was like a really good time. And I traveled by myself and I met so many interesting people and they all had same passions like me. So that was really cool. Mm. Yeah. And then after that, then I thought, maybe I have to go to Zurich again because there are not so many jobs up here in Lux. But I found a job here and stayed. But then in that job, I was not so happy and had a exhausting depression. So I almost burnout.
Right.
And that made me think, where do I want to go? And what do I really want in life? And so I became a professional organizer like Marie Kondo.
Yeah.
So something totally different. Now I'm helping people to get rid of stuff instead of buying stuff. And that's really cool right now. So at the moment I can say I'm living my best life.
Wow. That's a huge statement, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I'm so happy that it turned out like it is. Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to rewind all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And that is Davos. How is he growing up? You know, a lot of us, especially the ones that we're passionate about snowboarding, fantasize about growing. It's like, oh, if I would have grown up, you know, in the Swiss snowy mountains in a beautiful resort like Davos is, it would have been, you know, I would have become this or that, or would have done this or that. But I don't know. I want to know a bit of more of the reality of growing up in an actual resort or in a, you know, in a touristy place where it's all about skiing. Is that why you came into snowboarding? Who introduced you to snowboarding? Or was it just by yourself?
Yeah, I did a weekend course in snowboarding. Mm-hmm. And I know that like the cool kids in my school, like two of them, were already snowboarding. And I was inspired by them, I think, to go snowboard too. Mm-hmm. And I was instantly hooked by snowboarding. Mm-hmm. Like I really wanted to be able to do it and had a huge will. So I really learned it in one weekend.
Wow. But yeah. I imagine you used to ski before that. I mean,
yeah,
you're in Davos, like, yeah.
We were skiing a lot.
Mm-hmm. How is it growing up there? What do you do as a kid in Davos? Is it skiing all day?
Yeah, pretty much.
So yeah, our vision of it is the reality of it. Okay.
It is, but like, you know what's special about Davos? It's also like the it is a city. So you, as a kid, you have all the opportunities. There is a huge hockey club, one of the biggest in Switzerland, and there's cross-country skiing, there's snowboarding, there's skiing. So as a kid, you have all the options of getting into all those winter sports. And if you do not winter sport, you're a bit lost up there. So you have to choose one kind of.
yeah, fair enough. Yeah. So yeah, what, how, and then from that, I mean, fast forward studies and all of that, but you also mentioned you spend a lot of time traveling by yourself all around with your boards. Tell me a bit about that experience and what did you learn, or what values did you learn from that? Because I feel traveling alone is very different from traveling with friends, but I'd like to hear your point of view on that.
I think what I learned most, or a saying I have from my travels around the world, is that I'd rather be alone than in bad company.
Yep, that's
one thing I learned, and that I want to choose my company wise. And I think I also learned to spend time by myself and be with myself and appreciate that time with myself as well. And yeah, I think that are the most important things. And but there was one, like, I also felt lonely sometimes. For example, when I was in Japan, I was on this square where 4,000 people cross the road at the same time. Shibuya crossing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was there and 4,500 people were there as well, but I felt so lonely. Those times were, of course, part of the travels too. So what I also learned, traveling, it's not always funny. Some people think when you're on the trip around the world, you have to be funny and happy and smiley all the time, but there are bad moments too. And that's what I learned too. And that's fine. So I appreciate also the bad feelings. Sometimes, of course, it's not nice, but they need to be there to enjoy the good life and the good parts more. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's when you actually learn the lessons, right? I really resonate with what you're saying right now, and those moments of feeling alone and the wanting to choose your company and experience that thing. And I've enjoyed traveling alone as well, because it's a completely different experience, you know, being in the same place with friends or a group or a partner, or being there by yourself. Like, the experience is completely different. I mean, you put yourself out more and you try those things. But you also said that you travel with your boards. Did you use your boards as your company and your kind of like safety net when you felt that lonely? Is that maybe
assumption? Yeah, it definitely gave me reasons to get up in the morning.
Fair enough. But also, I mean, snowboarding, surfing, yeah, they're all individual sports, but we tend to have more fun or enjoy them more when we do it with people. So how did you combine that, traveling alone and doing the sports? How did you get to meet company, or did you mostly did the sports by yourself?
No, like in South America, I met many people who were surfing, And there it was no problem. And then I went to America and the people are so talkative and open-minded. So I always found people to ride with. But then I went to Japan and there it's totally different. There I spent so many days alone, not talking with anybody. And that was really hard. And then there was a nice, like I missed a bit the powder. I was a bit late and there we had a really bad season. But then there was this one powder day with 30 centimeters of fresh snow and I had no one to go with. And then it's a bit dangerous as well. But then on the last three runs, I met an American Japanese guy who I could have three runs with and they were great. Yeah, I wish I had met him sooner.
I love that from a trip around the world, what you remember is like those three runs. Isn't that great? Like, it's like those three runs were worth the whole time I spent alone in Japan. That's amazing.
Yeah.
How old were you when you took this trip around the world?
Oh, I was 27, 28. Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like it was your year that they say. Now something has happened with them. We're back online, right? So so you were already, you know, you already had a bit of experience. It's not like you were just a naive 20-year-old going around.
I was 19 when I traveled alone through Canada, so there I was very naive, of course.
Yeah, I did that one at 19 as well, and I remember I met a girl that she was from a town in Spain close to mine, and she's all, and she hadn't been living there for a while. She was a bit older. She was, come out, meet my friends. And I went, and the first thing I did was reach out to give them two kisses because that's what we do back home, right? And the girls were like so shocked, almost like in panic, that I was about to give them a kiss. And I was like, it was this awkward moment of like, what am I doing wrong? And then they just had the hand and I was kissing. It was like, and my friend just laughed, you know, because it's like that cultural shock that when you're so young, you're like, oh, all right. Yes, of course. How could I be so dumb?
Yeah, right.
But, you know, it's part of it. And now I give the hand first. And then if they reach out for a kiss, I give them a kiss or two or three like you do in Switzerland. So, but that's funny. So from that to traveling alone, have those amazing experiences, going back to the place you love, finding another job. And then you mentioned burnout or almost burnout. How do you go from up here to down there? And how did you leave that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if I wouldn't have met this one psychologist, it would have taken me longer to realize. I didn't realize myself that I was burned out. I was just working hard. I enjoyed this job. I was performing very well. And like, I gave all my energy to this job. And yeah, I didn't even enjoy going up on the mountain anymore. That was like a really bad point in my life. And it was all just so stressful. And then I was still like, I didn't have to go to a clinic. It was not that bad, but I had therapy. And through that, I learned so much more about myself because I distanced myself a lot. Like after traveling, I wanted to focus on my career again. And after having one whole year of fun and sun and I thought, yeah, now I have to be serious and get a step forward in my career. And I really dedicated all my energy to the career. And that's the point where it's not healthy anymore when you're out of balance.
Also from being somewhere and then going away by yourself and kind of, you know, retreating yourself almost from probably your circle of friends, your colleagues, and then coming back, how did that affect your relationships with your friends and colleagues and people you knew around Blacks or your community of people?
I think when I came back, they were really open and happy that I was back again. So relationship with my friends didn't change much, but maybe I changed. But I thought after my travels, I'm closer to myself. But then on the way of this career path, I lost myself completely again. And then it took me some time to find again who I am, what do I want. And but in the end, I'm very thankful, because otherwise I would still work against my passion, against my values. Now I'm more aware what they are, and they are my focus now. Yeah.
So was through this recovery that you realized, or you discovered this tidying up coaching or therapy, yeah, or I don't know, what do you call it?
Yeah, exactly. That's how I discovered how to tidy up. I was always a tidy person, but when I was in those sick days, I watched the Netflix series of Marie Kondo. She's the most famous professional organizer. She's from Japan. And so I watched it and started tidying up my flat just like she recommends it. And then I figured out I bought so many cooking books because I wanted to be more healthy, but I never cooked a single recipe out of it.
Yep.
So it really
Google it instead when you want, yeah, something. Yep.
Maybe, yeah. And then I realized that I bought many things that I didn't need. And I started to focus again, what do I need? And that was so freeing for me that I thought, hey, I want to help other people to find out what they want through tidying up. And so I started this. Before that, I did a season as a snowboard instructor for my soul. And then and then I started the course for becoming a professional organizer. And
wow, so that is a thing. Idea, excuse my ignorance, I had no thing that you could become a professional organizer.
Yeah, it's still a new job, so not many people know about it, but it's a thing. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, yeah, you see all these like TV shows and they go into these like hoarders or like disorganized families and they kind of transform their houses, but I mean, I think these people, yeah, they're gonna have a house tidy for what, a week, a month, a year, and then slowly it's going to drift back into what it was, right? Like if you don't change the habits and the way you feel about stuff, you can't really, yeah, you can clean it again and again, but it's not really tidy, is it?
Yeah, it depends. Like I have some clients, for them it worked really well and their room still looks the same like when we ended our coaching. And then there's some clients which fall back into old habits. Yeah, there can be both.
But yeah, I guess you have to learn through the process as well.
Yeah, and if you implement a system with them that really helps them, then they stay tidy. Mm-hmm. But if it's a system which is maybe still too difficult for them, or maybe they still have too much stuff to maintain, then it's hard to keep the tidiness. Yeah.
I mean, I've never met anyone that says, well, yeah, maybe, oh, I'm a bit chaotic or I have stuff all over the place, but no one would ever describe themselves as, you know, dirty or untidy. Or how someone says, oh, okay, this is not okay, I need help learning how to tidy up. Like I would never think, oh, you need help tidying up. I think, oh, I'm tidy enough. I have my own organization. How's that line, or how do you go from one step to the other to be like, what's people realization, or how do you see that?
Yeah, most of my clients are overwhelmed with the stuff and or the amount of stuff they own. That's most of the time the point when they realized I cannot handle all these things anymore and I need help to organize it. Yeah, because most of the houses I visit, they just have a lot of stuff which they collected over years, or sometimes it's a problem that they moved into the house of their parents and their stuff is still there. Mm-hmm. Or the kids left, but the stuff of the kids is still there, but it's not in use anymore. Yeah, that's a bit. And then I think the biggest challenge for most people who call me is they have issues with letting go. Yeah, they're attached to their things emotionally, and then yeah
I guess the hardest things to let go, it's not that, you know, pair of dirty socks or that pair of extra jeans or that shelf, it's probably more the memories and the souvenirs and the, oh, this paper or this, I don't know, pass, it's what, when the first time,
exactly,
yeah, that collector of memories. Yeah, that must be really hard. So just a quick tip, like, not that I want you to help me tidy up right now on this, but maybe you could, but what would be one tip about kind of breaking this link with the more sentimental, or more, do we have to break that link, or do we have to kind of separate ourselves from things that mean something to us?
No, it's like, but you have to separate yourself from things that cause negative emotions. Keep all the stuff that causes positive emotions, but get rid of the stuff that makes you sad.
Mm. Yeah. So simple, yet so true, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And we hang on to those things all the time. Wow. But I mean, you're not only a tidy upper. I don't know what I'm going to call you.
Just a professional organizer. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. You also do, I mean, of course, you did all the marketing and social media background, and you're still working with that. You're combining the two?
Yeah, sometimes I still work with that, but my focus is more on the professional organizing. And the second part, which happened last fall, is that I work for the Jill Foundation, the nonprofit organization of Burton, which was founded by Donna and Jake. And yeah, that makes just more sense than marketing to me.
Oh, that's awesome. And this is really, really something that I do want to talk about. I want to understand more about Chill, more mm-hmm. about what you're doing with them, what's their presence in Switzerland and all over the world, and really what the goals are there, and how is your experience working with it? So yeah. Let's start from the beginning. What is it really like? Okay, it's a nonprofit, but what do you do? What's the goal?
Yeah, Jill has the goal to introduce youth to board sports and try to give them a change of perspective in their life. It's also mainly for marginalized youth. Like in Switzerland, we had the first program ever this year, and we worked with 30 kids from Afghanistan.
Right.
They were all traveling, most of them were traveling by themselves to Switzerland, and yeah, it's really nice that we could give them the opportunity to start snowboarding in Lachs for 6 days. It's not much, but I think they had a lot of fun during those 6 days.
So they came from Afghanistan
to Switzerland. Yeah, they flew by themselves
just to come snowboarding for 6 days.
So. Oh no. they are in a, sorry, that's
right. I'm like, wait, what?
No. They were fleeing from Afghanistan, so they're refugees.
Right.
And they stay in refugees' homes in Switzerland. And we picked them up and gave them the chance to come snowboarding in Lachs.
Wow. And how is this kid's life, besides out of these 6 days? Like, how is their life as a refugee in Switzerland? How's the situation?
The situation is rather hard at the moment. Like, for example, in this one institution, it's called Lilienberg next to Zurich, and there are 90 kids living all together there, and they have the opportunity to study German, and they also have a school program, but they're separate. They're not included in the Swiss school system or anything. They have their own school. So they are in Switzerland, but they hardly have contact with Swiss people, and it's really hard for them to get into the Swiss culture also.
Yeah. So I mean, it's great that they come and snowboard for 6 days, but you know, is that experience and that memory and that excitement, but besides of that, how does that help them any further?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's like about the sustainability of this program. That was also one of my fears. So we show them this great life in the mountains, and then they come back to their life and think, oh, I will never ever be able to do that again.
Yeah.
But then I met Carlos, who was a participant in LA in 2002 or 2003, at the Chill program in the US, and he was also from a marginalized community outside of LA. He originally is from Honduras. And he had the chance to be part of the Chill program twice. And also being, he was also invited to the Burton US Open where he met Jake in person. And since then he changed his life and he was like, I can really change things if I want to. And he started to believe himself in himself and really changed his total life. And now he's living in Innsbruck with his wife, has one daughter, introducing her to snowboarding. And that makes me think, like, out of those 30 youth, I'm sure there is one or two who will really take them their chance to create a different life just through this experience with Jill. I'm sure not all of them enjoyed it and not all of them will take the opportunity or fight for it and go in the right direction. Yeah, but a small part will.
Yeah, and I guess that makes it worth it. But also, it's not like you're showing them something that it's accessible by nature. I mean, snowboarding, skiing, mountains, outdoor, it's for rich people. Just the amount of equipment you need, the, you know, to get there, the ski passes, like the prices are prohibitive. And let's face it, we all love it and we want to think that we're this alternative community, but come on, it takes either a lot of commitment and a lot of sacrifice to just be like, this is it and I'm not going to take anything else, or it takes a lot of money, or both in most cases. So it's not like you're showing these kids something that it's easy to get. So Exactly. Besides showing them the sport, which is great, and you know, everybody should ever always have a chance, how do you further support them if they want to keep involved in it's not only about snowboarding, is it? Like
first question.
Yeah, so how do you further support them on continue, if they enjoy the sport, if they enjoy the community, how does Chill support them to be able to keep doing it?
Exactly. What is the good thing about Chill, it's not only a learn to ride program, it's also a program where we try to give them how you say, we want to make them learn about certain values. So each day is dedicated to a value. Uh-huh. And with that, we also want to introduce this change of perspective. So that's our goal with those values. We also want to open their view to certain things. And that's what we give them further in life. If you can say it like that. And then, this time, as it was the first program, we didn't have the chance yet to provide them snowboard equipment for those who wanted, but they had the chance to buy a snowboard jacket, very cheap, and only three of them took the opportunity to buy it. So the interest of doing it again was also not that big, but what we're going to do is a skate program in summer, and we try to do it with the same youth, more or less. Like they also, maybe some of them are still in this institution, some probably not. But so we want to keep on going with the same youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to support them further.
Exactly. That's the goal. And like with skateboarding, it's so much easier to give them just a skateboard and maybe hopefully also a helmet.
Yes. Ideally, yes.
And so with skateboarding, the entrance barrier is less. But yeah, in the end, it's the chances that some of those youth keep on snowboarding are really low. But the goal is to give them a change of perspective, new inspiration. Also, the connection with Swiss people, like all the instructors were living here. And we also had the opportunity to introduce them to a person from Afghanistan who is working in Laax already for several years. So they also saw that it's possible to have this lifestyle, but you have to do something for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you need to commit to it.
Exactly.
So this is the first program. What was your function within the program? What were your roles, or what were you actually doing?
Yeah, I was the program coordinator. So I make sure I contacted all the institutions, made sure that the kids had the opportunity to come. I just coordinated everything and created the program. And then during the day, I was there and made sure that the program was running well.
Okay. How many people involved are right now in Chill Switzerland?
So it's just Daniela Meyer and me.
Oh, right. Okay. So, but then the instructors and is it yourself as well now?
No. Yeah, I was instructing as well, of course, but LAX is our main sponsor and partner. And they supported us with instructors, with rental material, and with lunch. Then the bus ride was financed through Chill. And then we also provided soft goods for the youth, and that was sponsored by Burton.
Right. Yeah. So it's an initiative that it comes from Burton, but of course it kind of uses Burton network to kind of get support, and you know, LAX is one of a longtime partner with Burton, so it's not surprising that they're doing it there, using that network. But how is it funded? Is it donations only? Is it through these collaborations with institutions? Like, how, I mean, it's a nonprofit, but how can someone contribute to that?
Yeah, we're open for donations, of course. Okay.
Good.
Yeah, and it's like really that partnership, donations, and also Burton. Mm. Yeah.
How do you see the support? Do you think the perspective for the foundation in Switzerland is good? Do you think it's going to be able to keep going in time?
Yeah, I think we're still able to keep going. But funding is definitely a point we have to work on more. Mm-hmm. But since like the first SCAPE program we did in fall 21, so it's still very new everything. And I mean, Chill has been operating in the US already since 1995, so they're established very well already in the US, and now it's our goal to establish Chill also further in Europe. And there are programs also in Austria and Italy and Czech Republic, I think. And the goal is really to do it more the US way. Mm-hmm. Do this 6 days program, but because in Italy and in Austria they're not 6 days yet, but we're all working on that. It's and it always comes down to funding, of course.
Yeah always. The ugly funding face. What has been your experience like? What have you learned from it? What's your biggest takeaway?
Wow, I learned so many things during those 6 days.
Oh, wow.
But I think what I learned most is kids who experienced what they experienced, they have no fear. And like some of them, they even took the the chairlift by themselves, went down and up again. And we were scared because they never did that in their life, but they experienced so much more in their life, which we never have experienced. And they probably saw death and all those things. And so then you have to put it into relation again. They experienced so many shitty things. So what can happen to them on a chairlift, you know?
Yeah, it's like safe environment, you know?
Exactly.
How old were these kids this time?
They were 11 to 19.
Okay, so it's like a wide range of teenagers and pre-teenagers. Exactly. So they're not scared of themselves.
No.
They don't have fear. What else, like as a personal level of something that you can apply to yourself, is there something that you learned from them that you're going to take on and cherish?
I really learned many things, just which one I'm going to point out.
Well, you can say many.
I think first of like one big point I learned is, or which I was not so much aware before I was working with Jill, is that really we have a lack of diversity in snowboarding. And then the second thing is language barrier is really a thing in teaching. I thought if you just show them how it goes, it would work well. But language still helps to teach them better. And the language barrier sometimes was huge. Yeah. And also the cultural differences. I did not have much contact with people from Afghanistan before. Now some did not know that much about their culture. And now I know much more. And that's such a huge benefit of this program for myself.
The understanding, yeah.
Exactly. And yeah, and then what was a very nice experience, but not particularly learning, was they had the chance to ride down the hill with Valentino Guselli. And like the spirit they had at the time when they had the chance to do that was so amazing. Yeah,
that's great. I think I saw some photos about it, and Valentino looked super stoked as well, and super happy. So that was really nice to see.
Yeah.
So we really, you know, you say it's Daniela and you. For those who don't know, Daniela is one of the original founders of Women in Board Sports, and she's now the country manager for Burton, Switzerland, if I'm correct.
Exactly.
So it takes an individual, or in this case two, to kind of bring this program to Switzerland. Like, that's really, really inspiring. And it shows that, yeah, it doesn't take much. Like, it just takes the will to do it. You said we don't have a lot of inclusivity in snowboarding, and I do agree. How has working with this program and, you know, starting to get acquainted with people from other circles, because you've been in the bubble of action sports for a long, long time, so I think this is a kind of like a contact to other sectors. How has that felt in you to be like, oh shit, we're so privileged? How is that experience?
Yeah, I think When Daniela first came to me and said, hey, we need a program independent contractor for Jill, I was like, oh, do I really have the time to do it? And now that I did it, I am so happy and fulfilled. And now I'm thinking, okay, I'm finally doing something that makes a lot of sense. And and I think that's also a bit what we should do more in the snowboard scene. We are all so privileged. We are living really the best life we could imagine. And we need to open the door to more people to do that.
Yeah, that was my next question. Like, how do you think, you know, we're not all Danielas or Michaelas. So how is it an individual with maybe not the, you know, network or the reach from a foundation, can we promote more inclusive snowboarding, skateboarding, surfing, whatever sport we do, how do you think we can help towards a more inclusive community?
Yeah, I think we as snowboarders or free skiers or whatever, we should take more people to the mountain who do not have the opportunity, because it's like always, like I had some very important people in my life who introduced me to freestyle snowboarding. And without them, I probably would still be just on the regular slope, riding down the hill, or also with splitboarding. You need someone who is going with you. And we need more people who go with other people snowboarding, who are not close to this sport. Yeah.
Yeah, I recently had a bit of that feeling myself. Yeah. I am now based in Sweden. And for Easter, we went to the resort and we went snowboarding in Ore, and we took my stepdaughter's cousin with us, and she's a skateboarder, she loves skateboarding, she definitely has snowboarded before, you know, she has her own equipment and stuff. But for us, because we're a snowboarding family and we go every weekend, and it's kind of like, you know, very much in what we do and what we are, it was a bit different for her. And despite her being one of the only skateboarders in the city, girls, and, you know, having all the equipment and having snowboarded before, I realized that we could show her around a little bit and take her under and show her a different way to snowboard than she has seen in the past, and kind of enabled that, because now she doesn't go as much because their family don't have the house or whatever. So we kind of like took her under our wing and showed her things, and oh, we're gonna go there, really? Yeah, let's do it, like, you know. And I think at times it was scary for her, or maybe more than scared, like out of her comfort zone, but at the same time it kind of opened her eyes a little bit more. Also sticking to the group, you know, as a teenager they kind of want to go by themselves, and they're like, oh no, we're going together and we're going to do this. And so yeah, I see what you mean. But of course, I mean, you know, she's family, it's easy because she has equipment, she already has all that set up. But for, you know, bringing someone that you don't know, like to be truly inclusive, I don't consider that helping inclusivity. Yeah, it's great because we bring more women to sport, younger girls, teenagers, but it's not really a matter of inclusivity, is it? Do you think there is something that we can actually, is it realistic to think like, hey, I'm going to go to the, I don't know, the association in town that have like social services or something, and bring the kids and take them snowboarding with me? Do you think as individuals that's a realistic goal to have, or no, we should contribute that, and think some other ways to do it, you know, as a personal title?
Yeah, as an individual you can contribute, for example, working as a volunteer, and we are always looking for volunteers at CHUP. But as an individual, I think we can try to include more people who we know already and who are not close to snowboarding but really want to try it. Like, we need to catch those people more and help them to get into the sport. I think it's not so much possible to just go to an institution, social service, and say, hello, I'm snowboarding, do you want to come with me?
Yeah, exactly.
You know. That's not how it works.
No, exactly. That's why it's like, I think a lot of us feel a bit helpless sometimes, because we wish, you know, snowboarding was more inclusive and there was more people from different backgrounds.
With the connection.
Oh, we're back. Can you hear me?
Oh, hello. I hear you.
I was just saying that, you know, as snowboarders in our community, I think a lot of us feel like, oh, I wish, you know, the community was more inclusive and there was people from more different backgrounds. And but then it's like, how do we do this, you know? Because the ski passes are expensive, the going to the mountains is expensive, the equipment is expensive, the time off is expensive. So it's not like you have to have that knowledge, you know. You can just go and throw yourself down the mountain. Well, maybe if you're fearless, but even still. Or even surfing or skateboarding, like it's if someone doesn't introduce you, as you said, it's quite tricky. So I think as a community, exactly, we still have a lot of thinking to do about it.
We definitely do, but that's exactly the point. What I mean, there needs to be this person who introduces you to the sport. And I think we as a snowboard community can more be, or you as an individual can more be, this person who introduces other people to that sport. I think we should think more of that, like, yeah, how can I introduce more people to it, instead of, oh, I'm living in this bubble and life is good.
Yeah. You've said at the beginning a huge statement of like, you're living your best life. And that's a huge statement, but also it means a lot of different things for different people. So what is success for you? What does it mean for you?
Yeah, for me, success at the moment means that I can go snowboard as much as I want, and that I can go on surf holidays 4 weeks a year or something like that. That's success for me.
Simple.
That's my go success. And besides that, success also means for me that the job I'm doing is meaningful. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that too. Like, it has to be fulfilling somehow. It has to make sense. Well, I think what you're doing with Chill and with the tidying up, and how does that relate to each other? Or it doesn't. In you, it has to. No, it doesn't. But do you think it's kind of like a part of putting things on its place somehow? Showing, yeah, you know.
The connection between those two things is me. I'm an organized person and I'm a snowboarder. And for both things, I want to pass on my passion for, to other people. Yeah.
So they are connected. So indeed.
Yeah, it's me. They are connected somehow.
So what, looking forward, what are you looking forward right now?
I'm looking forward to the skate program of Chill in Summer. It's still not finally discussed where and when it's going to happen, but it will happen. And I'm super excited to be the program coordinator again. And I also hope that we can do the same program in winter again. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. And since the season just ended, I'm also looking forward to next winter again.
Someone would have told you when you were like, I don't know, 20, that you would end up, you know, running programs for a foundation like Chill and tidying and organizing and helping people organize their lives. What would have you said to them? Like, what?
Yeah, I'll probably be like, really? Okay. Didn't know that this job exists. No, but that's like, I think Daniela, she's a huge role model for me, and she also dedicated her life to snowboarding. And I met her when I was 20. So, and I thought, if I can manage somehow my life around snowboarding and have an impact in some ways, that would be great. So it was kind of my dream to have an impact in snowboarding, but I didn't know how and when. So. Now it's so cool that I have the opportunity to have a little impact on some people with snowboarding.
It's amazing that you say that, because often I think like, how can I try and make my job meaningful somehow, or that it makes a difference somehow, when all I can think about snowboarding, skateboarding, traveling, this and that, like how does these align to values and how does that help anybody? And this is one of the questions that's often in my head and that I really wanted to ask you. It's like, yeah, how these reach people's sports and can influence other people. And I think through your story, you definitely explain that, you know, it doesn't have to be for everyone. It doesn't have to impact everyone, but if it impacts just a few and it helps passing on these values, it's worth it and it makes sense. And I think you're a very clear and great example to show how to use snowboarding in this case to show people another way alive and pass on good values. So I think it's amazing.
Thank you for those.
Thank you so much for sharing it with us. I mean, since I've met you, you've been this like bright, happy ball of energy going around, and I don't think I've never seen you not smiling. So I am sure that everyone and every kid in the program comes and sees you that they're like, yeah, this is where I'm meant to be. So we need more Michaelas in the community.
And more Albas, of course. Because I can say the same thing about you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we've been like looking back, it's like been many years now. So
yeah,
it's amazing. I can't wait to see what other things and what other programs you're running with Chill, and we'll make sure to share the donation link and hopefully other countries take it on as well and keep developing programs like this or something similar or parallel or together. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It was an honor to speak to you about all those things. And thank you very, very much. And thanks for all the things you do for women in action sports.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Michaela.